And so I'm here to work for the sanctity of marriage, as Sister Lucia said. And I was reading an article recently that talked about how it's not a coincidence that the whole, this McCarrick scandal, the whole thing broke exactly almost 50 years from the time Humanae Vitae was written. It was about July 25th, 28th, I'm not sure, of the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae. And we know that Cardinal Burke, he said to Raymond Royal that Mary said in Fatima, he predicted that there would be an apostasy from the church teaching regarding sexuality, and that many in the clergy, even some in the clergy, in our whole world, of course, thinks that there could be licit sexual relations besides between a man and a woman within marriage. And that's really what happened. We saw a practical apostasy from the teachings of Humanae Vitae. Many bishops refused to teach it in the United States. When it came out, this teaching of Humanae Vitae, which is that which said that sex should always be open to life, that there was a press conference, and Charles Curran from the United, now he teaches at Perkins and Methodist, SMU. Charles Curran, who was a huge theologian in the United States, you know, he says that you can dissent from this, and it was this big kind of just rebellion against the Pope and the Church, and it really caused a lot of suffering to Pope Paul VI, because the majority report, you know, they studied the pill, they studied all these things, and they gave Paul VI this opinion that the church should change its teaching and on contraception. But when the church didn't, all hell broke loose, the press and everything. And it was like the Pope took time and he prayed about it. He prayed about it. And then, so it was studied, because it was Pope John the 23rd who ordered this commission on questions of human life to be studied in marriage. But it wasn't until after Vatican II that in 1968 that finally Pope responded and he gave Humanae Vitae. It came out 8 years after the birth control pill was invented. So there was all this pressure because of the birth control pill to change the teaching, church teaching, and there's still pressure in the church. Of course, this led to the sexual revolution, you know, now sex without consequences. It was just about love, so to speak, just free love, right? No commitment, no sacrifice, no consequences. Most people don't know that every Christian church up until 1930, every Christian church taught that contraception was wrong until 1930. And there was a change there where the Anglican Church first broke with that unbroken tradition and approved contraception. And you can read the works of Martin Luther and John Calvin, why, according to the Bible, there's a lot of Protestants, according even to the Bible, why contraception's wrong. You could think of Genesis 38, the sin of Onan, for instance. But in 1931, Pope Pius XI wrote the encyclical Casti Connubii, which is usually translated on Christian marriage, and he reiterated the constant teaching of the church. And there was no debate on this issue until the mid-60s. Pope Paul VI held teaching that sex has two purposes, and I quote the encyclical. The two purposes of sex is the unitive and the procreative. That means it's for babies and bonding and for babies. The unitive, procreative. That's just what it is. If you look at it, that's the two purposes of it. This, the Pope says, this particular doctrine, often expounded by the magisterium of the Church, is based on the inseparable connection established by God, which man on his own initiative may not break, between the unitive significance and the procreative significance, which are both inherent to the Marriage Act. The reason is that the fundamental nature of the Marriage Act, while uniting husband and wife in the closest intimacy, also renders them capable of generating new life. And if these essential qualities, the unitive and the procreative, is preserved, the use of marriage, or I should say, the Marriage Act, fully retains its sense of mutual love, and the ordination to supreme responsibility of parenthood to which man is called. Pope Paul VI, in section 17 of Humanae Vitae, made several predictions about what would happen if contraceptives were widely used and available in society. He said, "First of all, let them consider how easily this course of action could open wide the way for marital infidelity and a general lowering of moral standards in society." Well, I think we can agree that there has been a lowering of moral standards in our society since 1968. Just think of the hookup culture. I remember when my dad, he would have to be a chaperone. You know, he was a little, when he was a kid, to his uncle when he was dating. And Janet Smith says that most of your dad saw what was on TV now, like back then. He would have taken those TVs and every dad in the neighborhood and just thrown it in the street, right? Just think of also how much the divorce rate's gone up by then. So infidelity has skyrocketed. This is what the Pope predicted, right? Because there's no more consequences to sex. You know, women are infertile. You're right, men can just contracept. There's definitely been a lowering of morality. Today it's just seen as something you do at best with someone you love, right? A lot of parents tell their kids, "Oh, wait till you really love the person." No, that's not going to work. You got to say no sex till marriage, right? You got to give them clear standards, because somebody's always going to think they love the person, and then that's just kind of a feeling. But it's got to be love has to be tested. Love has to be tested by chastity, by respecting the person, not seeking to use them as an object. Just think of all the many movies you've seen. And many times today, sex has nothing to do with love. There's actually an app. You know, it's all about hookup. It's like, find the closest person to you who just wants to have sex, and that's it. It just means nothing. Think of Tina Turner's song, "What's Love Got to Do with It?" Right? What's love got to do with it? Now, you know, I've been born into this culture. I was born in 1979, so all this went on way before me. I just inculcated it, right? Go to health class, 7th grade, learn about safe sex, right? It's good. It must be good because it's safe, you know. Here's a condom, learn how to put a condom on a banana. I didn't do that, but they say that people did. Sex is seen as just something biological, just mechanical, really no meaning, right? But we're rational beings. We have an immortal soul. We have a spiritual nature. So what we do with our body is a sign of our soul. It expresses in our soul, so it should have meaning. The second prediction that Pope Paul VI gave was, he says that a man who grows accustomed to using contraceptive methods may forget the reverence due to a woman, and disregarding her physical and emotional equilibrium, reduce her to being a mere instrument for the satisfaction of his own desires, no longer as a partner who he should surround with care and affection. I think this has really become true. Christopher West calls this not the sexual revolution, really, because he calls it the pornographic revolution. That happened. It was pornography is huge now. It's just a pandemic in our society. In fact, on Monday, I'm giving a talk to parents about how to protect your children from pornography. The average age these days of exposure to pornography is 9 years old. You know, it's on the iPad iPod I got for my 10th birthday. I found pornography. Right? They just give you. You're giving your kids pornography if you just give them the internet. So it's going to pop up. You know, even like there's these YouTube channels that like, or pornography things that they like target the kids through like keywords and things like that. It's just sick. You can see how there has been a lowering of that reverence towards women. Drive down I-45. I used to be at a parish area. Billboards, you can't even look at the billboards, right? It's just, in 1960s, it was already looking worse, but it's really gotten bad today. Women are being treated as objects more and more. Just think of you know, this sexual abuse of the Harvey Weinstein and all this, the Me Too movement, this abuse. Just women, the dignity, women are the crown of creation. And their fertility, that they could have a child, that's something that such reverence, like a man wants to fight and protect the woman, the family, the maternal feminine heart of a woman. There seems, and this is from Janet Smith, she says, there seems to be an enormous outbreak of sexual abuse of women. The statistics are just overwhelming for how many women have been sexually abused by someone in their household. And I'm sure it's even worse now with pornography. Jesus said to the women of Jerusalem, the days are coming when they will say, blessed are the barren and the wombs that never bore and the breasts that never nursed. So you can kind of see that. Blessed are the breasts that never nursed. Of course, we don't agree with that. I'm just saying that there's this contraceptive, what John Paul II talks about is a contraceptive mentality, that our hearts are against life. We think pregnancy is like an accident. Janet Smith says this, you know, I got pregnant by accident. Well, you can get hit by a car by accident, fall off of a cliff by accident, but you can't get pregnant by accident. It actually means something has gone right with an act of sexual intercourse, not that something has gone wrong. But because people are using contraceptives, they think they get pregnant and they're surprised. My gosh, we got pregnant. We didn't have that in mind. That wasn't part of the picture. So we have to do something about it. What do? We go down to the abortion clinic. And so that's really one of the results, according to John Paul II, of this contraceptive mentality in our culture is abortion. And I'll prove it to you. 1992, the Supreme Court Planned Parenthood decision, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, says this. For two decades, couples have based their intimate relationships on the availability of abortion should contraceptives fail. Now in this whole Supreme Court, so that's what they said. In this decision, they don't mention one thing about the humanity of the unborn child or that if the fetus is a person or not. It's just dismissed because it says that we must have abortions because we have contraceptives. It's a necessity. Contraceptives are, according to Janet Smith, manifestly related to hostility to fertility. Think about the word contraception. It really means against. Contraception means against the beginning. Against the beginning of what? Life, right? It's against God's creative action. The awesome power of God to create life. I mean, when a couple has the sexual relations in marriage, at that moment, God, or any time, God gives a human soul, an immortal soul to that child. It creates a creative act to God, from God. There's this one quote I wanted to mention real quick. Yeah, so it's this love that's transcendent. Okay, it says, the two becoming one flesh can never be total. He says, the marital act transcends itself by bringing into being a child, right? The two become one flesh. Literally, they do become one flesh in a third person, in a child. The marital act is a mere condition for conception because it is unable to affect offspring, save by his intervention. God alone creates, right? So it's only God that can create a human person that time through his immediate action. Many couples have problems with fertility in these days. There's a growing amount, right? And I know even my cousin, he didn't want to have a baby until they had a big house. And then they got the big house. So they wait like 3 years, they're contracepting, 4 years. And then once now they have the big house, and then they can't get pregnant, right? So what do? You go back to the doctor and you get things to help you get pregnant, So, you know, I know there's a lot of people, we've all fallen for the lies of the sexual revolution, okay? Myself included, so I'm not condemning anyone. This is the truth, and I think it's, our culture needs to remember the beauty, the goodness of sex the way God made it, which is to give life and to unite the two becoming one as a communion of persons. So, As I mentioned, the pill was why Humanae Vitae was written. And I'm quoting again Janet Smith, I'm sorry. She says, when do you take a pill? You take a pill when you're sick, but pregnancy is not a disease and fertility is not a disease. Fertility is a healthy condition in an adult person. It's those who are infertile who need assistance in becoming fertile. They are the ones that need medication. And she quotes how that there's a book, The Bitter Pill, by Dr. Ellen Grant, who was very much in on distributing contraceptives in the 60s in London. But she saw woman after woman coming in with different pathologies that she found were pill-related, such as high blood pressure, blood clots, cysts in the breast, all sorts of things. And she said she's not going to prescribe these anymore. And when they were first testing the contraceptive pill, they invented one for men, but the testicles shrank. And so they said, forget it, no more. But when they tested it on the females, three women died, and they just said, we just need to adjust the dose. Yeah. There's other bad side effects. Most women, in fact, 50% of women who start on the pill stop within the first year because of unpleasant side effects. So these side effects are really largely those of, here they are. Increased irritability, increased propensity to depression, weight gain, and a reduced libido. And I've also heard that in animals, it makes the female less attractive, like they did on monkeys, less attractive to the male. Also, and so Janet Smith says this, I don't know about the rest of you women, but I'm looking for a pill that will make me more irritable, more depressed, help me to gain weight, and reduce my libido so I can have sex. And I'm sure all the men would like the woman he's dealing with to be more irritable, more depressed, gain weight more easily, and have a reduced libido. Don't you? And also, and this is something I'm going to share. It's painful to hear, but it also functions as an abortifacient. That what it does, it prevents ovulation, but in case there is ovulation, the pill prohibits nidation, or that the uterine wall is sloughed off like the surface, so it can't implant itself, the embryo, on the uterine wall. Okay, and she says that Norplant and IUD and Deprovera also work as an abortifacient. And I don't have time to go into each one of those. The church believes that sexual intercourse should be an act of love. Right, has meaning of total union. It should be a moment of grace for the couple, a moment of grace, a blessing, that you're more united from this act. Paul 6 says, the fact is, as experience shows, that new life is not the result of each and every act of sexual intercourse. God has wisely ordered laws of nature and the incidence of fertility in such a way that successive births are already naturally spaced through the inherent operation of these laws. So women, forget how many, but days of a month are fertile, very, I don't know, maybe someone could tell me how often. 5 to 6 days of a month, the woman's fertile. The church, nevertheless, is in urging men to the observance of the precepts of the natural law, which it interprets by its constant doctrine, teaches that each and every marital act must, of necessity, retain its intrinsic relationship to the procreation of human life. So, the way I look at it is this. Marriage, the sexual act, should be an expression of the wedding vow. So when a couple gets married, they promise to love each other faithfully. I will be faithful to you. They give themselves totally, a total gift of self. And they also promise to receive children lovingly from the Lord. Right? And they're also asked, have you come here freely? So this is what the wedding vows are, what marital love is. It's a faithful love, one person, faithful. It's freely entered into, so it's free. It's a total gift of self. You hold back nothing, you give your whole self. And it's fruitful, life-giving. Faithful, free, total, and fruitful. And when you think about it, that's what God's love is like. God's love is faithful. You know, he loved his own in the world. He loved them until the end. You know, he's faithful. Jesus is there. It's fruitful. It's life-giving. I have come that they may have life, life to the full. This is the bread of life. You know, we become one with Christ, the bridegroom of the church, one flesh with him, and that union with Christ gives us life. That love is faithful. It's free. He respects our freedom. And it's a total gift. Christ gives his whole self for us. He teaches us everything the Father taught him. And that's what marriage is, that kind of love. And so if we make that love, that vow with the soul in marriage, with our heart, with our words, the church says that the marital act, because it's that the sexual act, should also say that. That is why we say, for instance, that the night of the wedding and or soon after the wedding when the couple does have sex, that is the consummation of the wedding vows, right? Because marriage is a sexual union. The two become one flesh. It's not just about love. It's about the two become one, right? Doesn't mean that sex has to be the center of your relationship, right? But it is something good that God made. It's the one flesh union. Like we're one with Christ becomes one with us, one body. We're the church. We're the bride of Christ, but we're also his body. We're one with Jesus. So, sex also is, I want to say the word, ecstatic. It means standing outside self. It means to make a gift of self. This is what... this quote, again, I was trying to quote you, says, "The two becoming one flesh can never be total, for no created person is wholly accessible to any other. Neither party can give all he is to any created being. The deeper the love, the more it calls out for an absolute transcendence." So that love needs to transcend beyond itself. "That their love be completed and go beyond itself. The marital act transcends itself by bringing into being a child. But even if it does not result in a child, the love transcends itself in the transcendence of God, who joins you together," right? Who created the marital act, who we're not thwarting the act by changing the nature of the act. So the sexual act should also be a gift, a total gift of self. Now, think of, for instance, the barrier methods of contraception. This does not speak the language of a total gift of self. This is what Janet Smith says. Now, when I'm talking about barrier method, I'm talking about diaphragm or condom. He says, "That's a wonderful word, barrier. I want to make love to you, but I've got to get my barrier in place. Sounds a bit like making war, not making love. I have to get my spermicide." Spermicide means killing the sperm. "I want to make love to you, but I'm going to kill any sperm that come my way. There's something," this is Janet Smith, "there's something hostile in that act. But I claim that contraception is fundamentally hostile, especially to a female's fertility. Because, you know, it's the males who can have sex and not get pregnant. So what the pill does and contraceptives do is make a female like a creature who can have sex and not get pregnant. But that's not what we are," she says. "And it's not a great burden and a great defect to be a person who can have sex and get pregnant. That happens to be a great gift. But we treat it as if it's a great deficit." So as I said, and sex should be express the total gift of self, be a true union, right? It's not even a true union with this barriers. It should be faithful, only with my spouse, otherwise it's a serious sin, right? It's called adultery. It should be free, respecting the freedom of the person. Again, these are all the faithful, free, this is what marital love is. It should be free, otherwise it's called what? Rape, right? That's really bad. Can't be forced. It should be fruitful, life-giving, or at least open for God to perform his creative act. And so in this way, sex is a blessing, a true moment of grace that bonds the spouses. And I submit to you that sex this way is something good, and the couples who respect this teaching will find even greater joy. God is love, and if God is kept out of the bedroom, as I've heard people say, keep God out of the bedroom. Then if God is love and God is kept out of the bedroom, then whatever's happening in the bedroom is not love. I know that many people have fallen for the world's view of sexuality, but we see the bad fruits. Couples who contracept have a 50% divorce rate, at least. Paul VI spoke of greater marital infidelity. Couples who use natural family planning have a less than 4% divorce rate. Less than 4%. So, what about other things? If sex is meant to express God's faithful, free, fruitful, total love, what does sex outside of marriage say? This is also Penelope Cruz in Vanilla Sky, not an appropriate movie. I haven't seen it, but I heard she said this in the movie. She says, "Don't you know that when you sleep with someone, your body makes a promise, whether you do or not? Sex is meant to speak a language. It is meant to express God's love. Jesus calls us to love, and this includes our sexuality." And so, of course, the church has authority to talk about sexuality. It's the most important human act, really, because besides the sacraments, the spiritual, the supernatural realm, and the natural order, this is where human life comes from. And marriage is the heart of the family, and it's where we come from. So, of course, our morality should reach to our sexuality. So we shouldn't keep our sex life separate from our spiritual lives. We are rational creatures, and sex has a meaning. As the Romans says, we'll be judged, the Bible says, by what we do in the body. We can't be, I'm spiritual, but then my body's doing something else. We get to live in our bodies, offer a sacrifice. Even celibacy. Celibacy, I make a complete gift of self, sacrificing myself for the church. Right? It's this total gift of self. We're all called to make a total gift of ourself. Husbands to wives, a total gift, right? To give myself. When it's all about pleasure, Pope John Paul says, and it's just through contraception, just about pleasure, it becomes, instead of a gift of self, easily becomes, I seek my pleasure. That person seeks their pleasure. It easily becomes less about union, but more about using the person. So if a couple's not married and they have sex, they're saying with their body, I'm all yours, we are one, I want to have your child. That's what the bodily act is saying. But if they have not made that free decision, if they haven't not made that commitment, then that act is a lie, and that's called fornication. Now I'd like to speak about natural family planning, and I'm not the expert here. The church does say, Paul VI does not say, you have to just trust in God, let God send you whatever children they do. He does. And I have met couples like that. I'm like, you got to learn NFP. He's like, oh, we don't need NFP. I'm like, what? Yeah, we're just going to trust in God. I was like, good, awesome. And I was saying, if you use NFP, that's a flaw or anything like that. Paul VI here is saying, if there are well-grounded reasons for spacing births arising from physical or psychological condition of husband and wife, or wife, or from external circumstances, the church teaches, he says, that married people may then take advantage of the natural cycles imminent in the reproductive system and engage in marital intercourse only during those times that are infertile, thus controlling birth in a way which does not in the least offend the moral principles we have just explained. Oh, Father, that's the rhythm method. That doesn't work. No, this isn't the same as the rhythm method. Because he says this, our next appeal is to men of science. These can considerably advance the welfare of marriage and the family and also peace of conscience if by pooling their efforts they strive to elucidate more thoroughly the conditions favorable to a proper regulation of birth. So it's through science, and I'm not going to name all the scientists, but they've like Dr. Hilgers, the one for Creighton, there's the Billings, symptothermal, so that all these different scientists have come up with indicators of how to know if a woman to know her body if she's fertile, right? And NFP helps a couple know scientifically through the indicators if they're fertile or not, and that's 98% effective. It respects the natural purpose of sex. There's no sin in abstaining. Abstaining during fertile periods is not always easy. You make a sacrifice for God, but you find other ways to bond. And you just think how pleasing that is to God. Just, you're trying to bond. And it shows a really great respect that the man has for the woman. if they're doing natural family planning. It increases communication. And this is going to be a long quote, but I really like it. This is why natural family planning increases communication. It goes something like this. They have this conversation once a month, this is Dr. Janet Smith again, maybe 12 times a year. And it happens on that weekend when the mother-in-law takes the children, or you have a nice little business trip, and you're looking forward to this nice weekend together, a little quiet lunch, maybe some shopping, a movie, a romantic dinner, and a nice evening of relaxed lovemaking with no children, no stress, just a nice night. And the woman gets up in the morning and says, "Darling, I'm afraid I've entered the fertile phase." So there's this deflation, this disappointment. This weekend is not going to be everything that we thought it would be. Then this little conversation ensues, which usually starts with the question, "Why are we doing this? Why are we abstaining?" And sometimes that provokes a conversation about contraception, why or why not, but usually that's settled. And usually the question means, why did we decide it's not a good idea to have a baby? Why are we abstaining? And the husband might say, "Well, you know, the reason we decided not to have a baby right now is you said you're too tired. You've got too many little ones, or you've got a job now and you're really fatigued and you really can't imagine having another child. Are you still tired?" And she might say, "Well, no. As a matter of fact, I'm not too tired right now. The younger ones are a little bit older, and you know, I think they may be able to handle another baby." You know, my sister just had her fourth, and it's so neat to see like the kids being taking care of themselves, entertaining themselves. Like, it's just naturally like that. Like, before, I remember going to my sister's house, and she just had her hands full with these two kids, like, they're just like always kind of in her face and stuff. And now there's like this tiny baby. They weren't planning on it, but it's like, okay. And I'm really impressed. My sister is not like this uber Catholic, like, you know, she wasn't homeschooled. She didn't learn all this stuff growing up, but it just made sense. She studied it, natural family planning. Partly it helped because I went into the seminary. I think there's this. And then her friends aren't even Catholic. They want to learn natural family planning. Just because, like I said, the pill, things like this, there is an attraction to natural things. And so I'm very proud of my sister, Caroline. So let's take a risk, she says. "Let's really enjoy this day in the way we plan." Or she might say, "Of course I'm still tired. You never help. You said you'd give the kids a bath. You don't give them a bath. You said you'd let me have Saturday afternoons free. I never had a Saturday afternoon free. Of course I'm still tired." And you might say, "I'll start bathing them tomorrow, dear." Or she might say, "The reason why we're not having a child right now is you said your financial burdens are too great. You can't imagine supporting the family we already have, let alone anymore. Are you still financially burdened?" And he might say, "Well, no, I'm not. We refinanced the house and I was kind of panicking. I'm getting a promotion. Things are okay. Let's take a risk." Or he might say, "Of course I'm still financially burdened. Your friend Jane gets a fence around the house. You have to have a fence around the house. Your friend Jane gets a new kitchen. You need a new kitchen. Your friend Jane gets new dishes. You need new dishes." And she might say, "I don't need those new dishes." But the important thing is that they're having this conversation, and it's a conversation that focuses around the most important things, which is why they're having babies and why they are not having babies, and how their life is going together, and are they sharing burdens or not. So another thing that the Pope talks about is self-mastery and chastity in marriage. That the virtue of chastity, that's one thing we've lost sight of, is the virtue of chastity. Being able to say no to yourself, no to the sexual urge. Because if you can't say no to the sexual urge, and I'm quoting Christopher West, nothing I say is original, by the way. If you can't say no to the sexual urge, what does your yes mean? What does your yes mean if you can't say no to it? It's not a true gift of self. If you don't possess yourself, then what does your gift of self mean? You have to possess yourself in order to give yourself. John Paul says that the opposite of love is not hatred, but it's use, to use someone. We have to make sure our sex drive is under control and placed under love. Chastity, he says, the ability to be always ready in every circumstance to treat the other person as with respect and love, and not never as a means to your use. So it's to So we need to channel those urges to say to true love, which is to die to my lust so that I can affirm the person, and that's true love. And that's deeper than the sex drive, is the desire to love. Right? I once had this uncle, he says, yeah, sex is like eating, you know? It's just, you have to do it. It's like, and that's probably our culture's view, you know? It's just this urge you have to act on, you know? And this Freudian thing, like, oh, you're not going to be healthy, yeah? Or you're going to, whatever, just, your brain's going to explode. But the deeper desire is not sex. The deepest desire is love, right? So we have to channel these passions, these urges, to something deeper, which is love, right? So to find connection. When I'm in temptation, to find connection. To say, I'm going to love. I'm not going to see this person as an object. I'm going to die to my lust so I can show love to the person. So we need chastity. Sex must express love. And in marriage, that commitment provides security and a deep respect, because of the vows, this deep respect and this, the action express this. It's always a battle, right, between love and lust, John Paul II says, but it's a worthy battle to have. And that's not to say that attraction is bad. Eros is not bad. Attraction is not bad. But eros needs to be complemented by agape. Eros, am I losing y'all? Eros means desire. It's for this attraction. That's where the word erotic comes from. And sometimes people think that's lust just in itself, but no. The desire for the person is good. Adam had that desire for Eve, but it was also a desire to make it to love, to make a complete gift of self. So eros, the desire for someone, the attraction, needs to be complemented by agape, which is the willingness to sacrifice yourself for the person, to respect the freedom of the person, to not see them as an object to my use, but to want to make a gift of myself and freely receive the gift of themselves. But to grasp, to use, that's called lust. That's the difference. It's to use a person, to dominate them, to want to appropriate them to my ends. That's lust, where attraction doesn't have to be like that. Attraction leads to love. Just like when you met your spouse, there's this attraction. John Paul II says that attraction is not yet love. Eros, not yet love. It's the raw material of love. Love can come out of that. Like when you first met your spouse, that's the raw material, but don't get that confused with love. Maybe you don't feel that raw material at the moment. You don't feel that attraction. But that's, the love is what comes out of that. And the free decision that we all have to give ourselves to another person, to love them day in and day out, no matter how I'm feeling, because we're following Christ. Couples have to be disciples. Follow Jesus. It's not just this worldly view of love, of just romance, all about me, my feelings, what I'm getting out of it. That's love turned in on itself. That's not true love. I mean, we all have that selfishness. It comes in, pride. That's the real culprit to all of the divorce rate, all that, and not being open to trusting in God is pride, fear of Him. All right. In conclusion, our culture needs to come back to the true meaning of sexuality. It's a true act of love, communion of persons who are expressing this total gift of self to another. Women are the crown of creation and should be honored. And I've read, there's a book, it's called Adam and Eve Before the Pill. No, Adam and Eve After the Pill, which I recommend. And even she quotes like feminists, current feminists that complain that about the sexual problems and men and they have to protect against it, but how even they support the argument against contraception, right? Because in our world, sex is seen as just mechanical, just about pleasure, like as Pope said, separating the unitive from the procreative. It's just they separate those two things. Well, so now it was logical that homosexual acts would be seen as okay or valid, really, because there's really not a reasonable objection to those acts if you hold that contraception's okay. And even I said, like in the clergy, we see that we have all been influenced. I'm not talking about sexual abuse or minors. That's just totally separate. But as far as covering the homosexual things, bishop or even just approval of, you know, not this kind of sex close to life, whatever it is, unchastity. Bishop Robert Morlino said that what we need in our church is more hatred. And what did he say? Hatred of sin. This is all a call for us to live chastity in our sexuality, even in our celibacy, that it's a true gift of self to the Lord, following Jesus. Because Christ said, "This is my body given up for you." Amen. In the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit.